Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
People of the world, every boy and every girl, we are here to spice up your life!
I'm so excited right now.
Oh my God,
I'm so fucking excited.
The best worst idea we've ever had here at Junk Food Cinema! The cult and exploitation film cast, so good, it just has to be fattening. So good, I pray that we keep all of you through the end of this episode, but I'm not entirely sure it's going to happen. We'll see.
I think we will. I think we fucking will.
Well, you are optimistic Spice. That's sure. That's for sure. I'm more salty Spice, I think, is what's going on with me. And who am I? I'm Brian Salisbury, and he is C. Robert Cargill, two of the members of the Spice Boys, a tribute band that never really got off the ground.
No. And we are doing Cargillvember. A terribly named month in which I picked fucking everything. And so you know what I fucking picked? In my first good pick, I went for fucking Spice World, baby. You could not argue with me.
No.
I have deliberately, I've been wanting to ask you for, like, you came in and we just recorded our Of the Dead episode.
Yeah.
And Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
And I have not asked you. I keep wanting to go, Did you enjoy it? I have no idea if you liked it because you had never seen Spice World.
No, I had seen Spice World you know what? Before I get into that, because, oh my God, I have such things to show you.
We have some things to talk about.
But I do want to let you know that if you want to hear the other things we've talked about that aren't Spice Girl related, but probably should have been, you can hear our entire back catalog on iTunes as well as on the Blog Talk Radio. You know what? I didn't even tell you that this is Junk Food Cinema on FilmScoreRejects.com.
.com.
So, yeah, you can hear our entire back catalog on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio archives for Junk Food Cinema. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/Junk Food Cinema. And, of course, if you really like the show, if it's what you want, if it's what you really, really, really want, you can always support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Junk Food Cinema. Now, all of the housekeeping aside, let's put on our giant boots. Let's squeeze into our tightest leather dresses and let's talk about
some girl power, baby.
Some girl power with Spice World.
When the world is in trouble, when our future is in danger, we call upon one man. But when he's busy, he calls five girls. Columbia Pictures presents The Spice Girls.
All right, we're coming.
In their film debut, Victoria, Emma, Mel B, Jerry, and Mel C. They're ready for action. They're dressed to kill.
Do you want that shaken or stirred?
And thoroughly prepared for any encounter. It's a story of love.
I think with boys, you should be able to just wheel them in.
Yeah, and order them like a pizza.
Yeah, no cheese.
Oh, that's better.
And misunderstanding.
When the speeding melon hits the wall,
it's Christmas for the crows.
What did he say?
I haven't a clue.
Make your choice.
Oh, I like the blonde one.
No. Sporty.
Rock your world. And spice up your life with the Spice Girls. Spice World.
Yeah, but can they act?
Blah, blah, blah. Girl power, feminism. Do you know what I mean?
Get in the time machine with me, folks. The year is 1998. indie film is everything. I'm living in San Antonio, Texas.
And not San Antonio, as I understand.
Not San Antonio, in San Antonio. And me and I've fallen in with a group of really, really awesome film lovers. In fact, at the time I was working at it was my first semi-professional job. I was working as the assistant editor of a pro POC, pro LGBT literary magazine called the Sun Poetic Times. And our de facto offices were run out of this gay coffee shop down on St. Mary Street called Freedom, where we would do poetry readings. And this was a movie that people were really excited about, or really excited about like I was, because we wanted to watch it ironically. Like, it was going to be like, this movie is going to be fucking awful, and we're going to have fun riffing on this movie. And our other friends are like, shut up, I love the Spice Girls, we're going to go see it for girl power. And it's like, all right. And we all went together. I literally saw this opening night with a dozen people at a movie theater where we all went deliberately to see Spice World. And I fucking hated it. I hated it. I just did not get it. And it was not the movie I had signed up for. It was not the movie I expected, and would for several years hate this movie, until when I was a video store clerk up here in Austin. I was having one night where I was just having a shit night, and I was really unhappy. And Spice World had just come in. Somebody had dropped it off on DVD. And there were people just lingering in the store, and I wanted to go home, and I wanted to get people out of the fucking store. So we put on Spice World, and I was like, let's see what happens. Within 5 minutes, everyone who had been lingering all came up to rent their movies and leave. Like, they just, the Spice Girls had broken up. There was Spice backlash. People did not like the Spice Girls. And it was Spice back. And they, it cleared the store out. And so I was just like, holy shit. That worked. That actually worked. And so it became my de facto, hey, I need to clear the store out. So this is what I would put on. So whenever I was just tired of customers on any given day, I'd put on Spice World. And a funny thing happened. One day it was super slow and I was watching it and the movie clicked with me. And I was like, holy shit. The reason I hated this is I thought this was a film glorifying the Spice Girls and like just an empty, hollow film, a vacuous, hey, look how great the Spice Girls are. I had no idea that really this movie is deeply satirical and is a cutting, vicious assault on the music industry, and while also talking about why the Spice Girls were in the middle of deconstructing and falling apart and would subsequently break up shortly after this movie. Like, this is what destroyed the Spice Girls, and they made a fucking movie about it. Holy shit. And then it became something that I would watch regularly in the store. Like, me and a coworker would always work every Friday afternoon together, and we had Spice Fridays. And what we'd do is we'd put on a Spice Girls live concert that they had on VHS, and then we'd followed it up with Spice World. So for 3 hours of this Friday afternoon, we had Spice Friday, and that went on for a year, where almost every Friday we had Spice Friday. So this movie became a movie that I know by heart and that have a deep abiding love for, that I know is also a weird divisive movie that I find fascinating. On IMDb, this movie is rated 3.8.
Yeah.
On Amazon, this movie is rated 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Oh,
With over 550 reviews. Like, this is, the people that love this movie love this fucking movie, and everybody else slags the movie. And I feel like, and the reason why I wanted to do this Junk Food Cinema was not just so that I could talk about this movie that I love, but I want to talk about the satire in this movie, what's great about this movie, and get a bunch of you to hopefully give this movie a second chance, maybe a second look. Maybe you've never watched it. Maybe you're just like, fuck that movie, I don't care about that. This is not the best pop star in a movie ever made. That's I'm going to throw the gauntlet down and say that that is 8 Mile. Like, 8 Mile is the best myth building, best myth building movie about, you know, a celebrity where they come in and they, you know, a pop star, and they come in and they play themselves.
That's the good version of that. the not good but great version of that is Purple Rain.
Yes, exactly. Oh. Purple Rain is another one. You know, several of the Elvis movies. You know, there's a whole. This has been a thing since it's been since the talkies have happened.
Yeah.
But I would argue that this is the best satire of them. I think this is the best comedy of them. I think this is the most important of them. I think this is every bit as good as 8 Mile in its own way. Like, it's not trying to be a serious movie. It's deliberately trying to satirize everything about the entertainment industry, and it does a really good job of it and has some brilliant fucking cameos and performances by some people having a really good time making this.
I just imagine every listener right now going, hold on, let me just pull up in my calendar app. It's not April 1st. And then their heads explode because what we're talking about sounds like we're fucking with you. We're not fucking with you,
so do you,
at all.
Do you love this?
I kind of do.
Good.
But for different reasons. So now let's jump in my time machine. Take the hand of the ghost of Geekmas Past and let's go visit middle school Brian. Who was obsessed with the Spice Girls, thought they were literally the hottest women in the entire world, especially Jerry. Oh, I had a thing for Ginger Spice.
You know what?
Oh, did I have a thing for Ginger
Spice? Oddly enough, I did a poll today.
That's what I used to do when I saw pictures of Jerry Spice.
Well, yeah, no, that's where you'd go into your bunk and you'd imagine two becoming one. And and you needed some love like you've never needed love before.
I would slam it to the left and to the right.
So
all fucking episode, buckle up, guys.
Oddly enough, because I did a truly scientific poll, I did it on Twitter. So, of course, Twitter poll only allows four choices, so I had to exclude one. So I decided to exclude Baby Spice just to kind of fuck everything up. And so,
'cause you're a goddamn rebel.
Because I am a rebel, baby. So excluding Baby Spice, I asked who people's favorite Spice Girl was, and man, did people love responding to that fucking to that poll. People, everybody has a favorite Spice Girl or a Spice Girl they connect with. But oddly enough, I was surprised Ginger was the most popular by a long shot.
Oh, man.
Like, it was weird. Like, it goes Ginger, Scary, and then right after Scary is a tie between Posh and Sporty. And I did not expect that.
I also was a big fan of their music at this age of my life.
It's a lot of fun. It's really well constructed. They didn't write it.
No.
They had some really great songwriters.
At one point in this movie, they're like, I love this song. That's because we wrote it. And I went, bullshit, you wrote it.
Yeah.
Posh can't. By the way, my favorite thing about the Spice Girls, there's five of them. I'm pretty sure Posh doesn't really sing, because at various points in this movie, they're performing all of their songs, and you get little solos, little moments from all of them, except Posh. She never has a moment. In fact, there's one moment in the movie where the camera does focus on her, and she's singing, but it's Jerry's voice. So she's singing Jerry's part of the song, and since it's
Don't you talk about my Posh.
I'm just saying.
Posh was always my favorite.
Well,
I was a Posh Spice guy. My wife just walked by and is giving me this the dirtiest side eye for liking Posh.
Spice guy. I love that.
I'm a
Spice guy.
No, wait, okay, she's shaking your head and going, that's not what that was. She just wouldn't have guessed that I like that Posh. I get why? Because do I look like a Baby Spice guy? Or am I more of a Sporty Spice guy?
I don't
guy?
Know how to answer that question.
Like, what are you trying to say?
Why can't, I have no idea.
Why can't I be a Posh guy? I like Posh. Also, Posh is the coolest significant other of the group.
That's true.
Like, Beckham is and they've been together a very long time. So yeah. God bless them.
Been together like Beckham. The thing that I love about Spice World, watching it as an adult, which ostensibly I am, is that it feels like if the Beatles made one more movie and were way more open about the fact that they hated being the Beatles.
Yeah.
It
feels like Hard Day's Night, but Hard Day's Night where they're actually going, dude, this is not all fun.
Yeah, we fucking hate being Beatles.
Yeah.
That's what Spice World is. And it kind of is amazing on that level.
Yeah. No, it really is. It's like they're selling the dream in the movie and then peeling away the fact that it's really not like that. And that it's not as much fun as it seems. And here's the things you really miss out on. Like in the third act, when the movie becomes truly ridiculous and deliberately goes off the rails, they get their dream, and the dream is the dream that is every bit as silly as them jumping the bus with the bomb on the bus, is that they get to see the birth of their friend,
yeah.
You know, the birth right. of their friend's child, of their goddaughter. And it's, because that's the type of stuff that when you're doing this, you don't get to see. A lot of people don't even get to spend time with their own children. Like it is a rough life being that pop star for that small window of time that you get to be it. And this movie's deconstructing that.
And what's so remarkable about when this movie goes off the rails is it's so fucking weird from Jump Street that you don't even notice when it goes off the rails. In fact, when it does, which it absolutely does, you look down and you're like, oh, there was a track? We're off the rail, but there was a track. I didn't even know there was a track because this movie is so fucking bug nuts from Jump Street. And this is a movie about the Spice Girls just being the Spice Girls, going on various tours and promotional appearances and concerts. But the whole time, they're being undermined by this seedy tabloid publisher and his minion. And they're trying to basically break up the Spice Girls to sell more papers. Like, that's the plot of the movie. And then the whole time, the Spice Girls are trying to be there for the birth of their goddaughter and just deal with being the Spice Girls. And honestly, we keep mentioning the Beatles and Hard Day's Night. It is that, but more than the Beatles, they're the fucking Monkees.
Yeah.
Like, they're the jokey version of the Beatles, who this entire movie feels like a backdoor pilot for a Monkee-style TV show starring the Spice Girls.
Yeah, that's exactly how it feels.
And I am now furious that we never got a Monkee-style television series with the Spice Girls. Why did that not happen?
Because the Spice Girls broke up shortly after.
Oh, those dastardly publishers of those rags.
And also, as we see in this movie, they're not really actors either.
How dare you?
Let's be honest here. You know, they're great at playing their character, and they do a great job of making fun of playing their characters.
It's so weird that all you have to do is play yourself. And you're still not a very good actor. It's still evident when you're playing yourself that you're not a very good actor.
It's not easy, but...
it ain't easy being me, I guess.
Yeah, no, but it's not easy, but yeah, it is... that's exactly what it is. It is, I hadn't thought of it that way, but it is the Monkees.
It's absolutely the fucking Monkees.
Except with much sharper... With much sharper humor, much sharper satire, because everything in this movie is satire. Like, and we're going to get into the various people who are in it and what they're doing and why they're doing it. Because I find
it's going to be a question: what are you doing in this movie?
Well, I mean, the first time I watched this, I very much felt that I was like, "Oh God, Bob Hoskins, why did you show up for this? Like,
oh, Bob.
Like, why are you?" And now I'm like, "Is this Bob Hoskins' best movie?"
How dare you? Shut up. Okay. I've got along with a lot in this episode, and I agree with a lot. You crossed the fucking line.
No, I knew I'd finally get it. I've been trying to get a rise out of you for like 20 minutes.
But you underestimated how much I actually liked the goddamn Spice Girls.
I didn't. Yeah, I did. I didn't know how this was going to go down. I didn't know what this episode was going to be, and so I'm very happy that it is where it is. But no, I mean, let's face it, Long Good Friday is the very best Bob Hoskins movie ever.
1,000%.
Followed by Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and then we can argue after that, and Spice World falls in somewhere after that. So don't actually take that at face value,
hey
folks.
Hey guys, Spice World, still ahead of Super Mario Brothers.
Way ahead.
Just
way ahead.
Say it.
In fact, by the way, I was wrong. It's 3.4 on IMDb, not 3.8.
Oh, actually, I just looked at Rotten Tomatoes, and it ranks Image Not Available. So,
yes.
Not very highly regarded there, you might say.
But it is, yeah, it's interesting. So, like, let's go through. Let's not just rattle off the, as we normally do, the cameos or small bit parts. I think it's important to talk about the various people, because everything about this movie can be dissected. There's nothing here that's accidental. Every, as quick and slight as this movie feels, because it moves like a rocket on fucking rails.
It moves like a runaway bus driven by Meatloaf.
By the way, this is the first of two deep cut junkies. This is the first of two films we'll be covering in Cargillvember, in which not only star Meatloaf, but Meatloaf as a bus driver, because Meatloaf as a bus driver in this film is a reference to another film.
I'm just going to point out that Meatloaf on a bus is not this week's junk food pairing.
No. But it might be a junk food pairing for the next film. We'll find out. But yes, we are doing another Meatloaf. And some of you are going, oh my God, I know what that is. And other people are like, when was Meatloaf a fucking bus driver? You'll find out soon enough with a special guest star. I cannot wait for that episode. Oh, but yes, yeah, so we've got Meatloaf playing the bus driver. He's barely there. He's only there to make his joke
and get out.
Yeah. And it's the one joke in the movie where it's like, all right, you know, I'll allow it because it's Meatloaf. But aside from that, the rest of the movie is filled with such great humor that means something, and this is literally that joke that's just lies there. And depending on how you feel about the movie, you either kind of love the joke or kind of hate the joke. But essentially, the toilets are all plugged up and they can't get a plumber to come out, and so they're like, well, why don't you do it? And he's like, look, I love these girls, they're the center of my life, but I won't do that.
I would do anything for them,
but I won't do that,
which I believe is a reference to a song on his album Lead Balloon Out of Hell. Because that's how that fucking joke goes over.
Oh, like, my God.
Like, that... I don't, like, my collar's not even that big, but I'm like,
that joke.
I'm going full Charles Nelson Reilly on
but
that.
But I kind of love the fact that they got Meatloaf there just to do that joke. Like, that's the joke. And that it's like, if you've seen the other movie we're going to talk about, you're like, oh shit, he's playing a bus driver again. That's great.
I just realized the tagline for this movie could be, yep, that's the joke.
Yep, that's the joke. So let's. But let's talk about one of your favorites.
I'm sorry. I just have to pause for this out-of-body experience of watching myself at 33, 3.5 years and a million downloads into this show, and we're talking about fucking Spice World with all of the enthusiasm of, like, when we talked about Battle Trump.
Dude, and what happened? What happened today? I saw your Twitter feed. What happened today?
Oh, great story. So, If you have kids, you know one of the hardest things when they're little is taking them to get shots, because your whole, like, instinct and job as a parent is to protect them from pain.
And they're going to jab them with a sharp thing.
Oh, your fucking cries. Oh, my God.
Why have you betrayed me, father?
This poor nurse has no idea how close she came to getting a metal tray upside her head. Like, I know I shouldn't think that. It's her job. She didn't do anything wrong, but I just wanted to hit her with something.
Shots, 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 shots.
He'll learn. But for the rest of the day, he was just, like, in a mood. He was super cranky and inconsolable. And at one point, I'm just walking him around, and this movie is playing, and he stops crying. And I'm like, okay. So I just stand there in front of the TV, and he is staring at the screen. This went on for 10 minutes.
It's a really colorful movie with music. Why would a baby not love that? Like, well, that is...
And to be fair, in the middle of If You Want to Be My Lover, they do start jingling keys, which I thought was a weird choice, but it worked for Zane. He was all about it. But yeah, I even took a picture because he was fucking mesmerized by this. Like, this is a movie that plays well with infants.
And you took an image of it, and you can see him staring at the tele. Like, he's clearly fucking just entranced.
He must have his dad's taste in British pop star redheads. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
But he could be into Baby Spice, or he could have really great taste in Dig Posh. I don't know. You know,
Baby Spice. I didn't think about that. That could be the obvious connection. Spice World!
Spice World. Okay, so... what I think is probably, like, the thing about this movie is it has so many great cameos, so many great small parts played by great people. But there are two people in particular that just, when I was rewatching this movie, I'm like, man, I cannot, if Brian hates this movie, it's going to kill him that these two people are in this movie. And the first one is, of course, Roger Moore.
Oh my God, Roger Moore in this movie.
Roger Moore, of course, is playing, you know, the record label owner. He's playing the guy who essentially owns the Spice Girls, so to speak, but always speaks in riddles and nobody ever knows what the fuck he's talking about.
No one ever has a fucking clue what he's saying.
Which is very common at that level of of entertainment, where you get somebody who's up there who says stuff that everybody thinks is deep, and they're giving like the big rousing speeches, and it's like, I don't know what that metaphor means, but I'm too afraid to tell you what it means.
The headless chicken can only know where he's been. He can't see where he's going. That one actually probably makes the most sense of anything he says, and it's still about a headless chicken. No, I absolutely, like, if Roger Moore had done nothing for the rest of his career after this, I would have been okay with it. I would have been like, oh, in fact, I'm not sure that he did do much after
he was this. Really old and when he made this film.
Like, but he's so great. And what the creepy, weird, awesome thing that he's doing that feels like a cartoon, that feels like he's in an episode of the goddamn Banana Splits, is that he's got a different animal every time he's on screen, and it's always a white animal. He's got a cat, and then he's got a rabbit, and they're all, and he's sitting very much like a Bond villain stroking a white pet, and it's like, oh, of course.
And they have to make a Bond joke.
Yes.
They have to. And so the Bond joke is very subtle. Like, it's actually like, hey, that's actually a good joke. Of all the bad jokes he could go for, he gets up, and they're like, well, we could really stir things up. Oh, there's no need to stir. And it's like, okay, hey, and he walks back having made a martini, and he walks back and sits down and drinks a martini. It's like, that's a cute Bond joke. Yes. You know what? I respect you, movie.
There's another Bond joke in the movie, but it's not his.
Right.
When they're doing the let's try on clothes montage, one of, I think, three in this movie, Posh is actually dressed as Honey Rider from Dr. No,
yeah.
Which is a great Bond reference. It just happens to not be a Roger Moore Bond film. So, you know.
They do the we're dressing up as various things.
Including each other, which
felt like, well, that's actually my favorite, is when they make fun of each other and they dress up with each other's shtick. And I thought that was a really cute, because one of the things they lean on in this movie is how much they are defined in the media as being one thing and only one thing. And that is who their personality is, that literally their personality is, I'm sporty. I'm a baby. I'm rich and dressing. I'm really fancy. I am posh. Even Scary Spice, what's her thing? She goes rawr. Like, literally they're making fun of, she's literally roaring at fish because that's her gimmick.
Which would become like the archetype of every American boy band, where it's like, we're just going to have types.
Yeah,
these aren't people. They're not performers. They're just types of characters.
And that's the thing, is I don't think the Spice Girls get the credit that they're due and that they are responsible for, that they are really responsible for the shift to bubblegum pop. That the bubblegum pop we got in 98 and 99 that created NSYNC, the Backstreet Boys, Christina Aguilera, Pink.
Did you say Britney already?
No, I was a Britney Spears.
Britney, bitch.
All of that came from the Spice Girls and us trying to ape that.
And I understand that there are some of you listening out there who are like, how could you celebrate them for unleashing this scourge upon humanity? I get that. But the thing is,
I don't think it's wrong to be upset at them for that.
But the reason I love that type of music is the same reason I love like Fun Dip and Snickers. And it's like, these are things that are manufactured specifically to be pleasing to the senses.
They're just meant to be fun.
It's junk food music. If we had a spinoff podcast, Junk Food Music, this is exactly, it's literally called Bubblegum Pop, guys. It's,
hey, this is our episode on the A-teens. Fuck yeah.
No, it's a goddamn asterisk, and you keep it as a fucking asterisk. Don't you tell me. Don't you tell me. No, it's not 97 degrees, motherfucker. It's 98.
So moving on from him, from Roger Moore, we then get into Richard E. Grant.
Richard E. Grant, who plays their manager?
Their manager.
In this film, and
their road manager.
Their road manager. You know Richard E. Grant. He has been in so many fucking things. Like, he's one of those guys that you'll see immediately and you're like, oh, I saw him on episodes of Game of Thrones, or I saw him in this movie. I saw him in The Player. I saw him in Hudson Hawk. I saw him in... Yeah, I said Hudson. What do you mean you haven't seen Hudson Hawk? You motherfucker. How have you not seen Hudson Hawk? You go fix that immediately. You do it right. No, I'll wait. No, I will wait right here while you go do this. But I mean, he's just one of those guys that you've seen Gosford Park. You've seen him in everything. And he's great as the sort of like way in over his head road manager who is trying to deal with Roger Moore and also trying to deal with the two Hollywood movie executives who are throughout this movie pitching the movie that we're watching.
Yes.
And doing it poorly.
Played by George Wendt.
George Wendt.
And Mark McKinney from the from Kids in the Hall.
And currently on Superstore, where he's fucking hilarious.
Oh, I haven't seen Superstore.
He looks completely, he's gained weight and he's got this weird voice affectation. Like, he's almost unrecognizable as Mark McKinney. But he's great on that show. And I'm going to say this to be kind to George Wendt. I think he's playing Joel Silver because the other option is he's playing Harvey Weinstein.
No, he's playing any movie producer you know. Like, he's literally, like, they're, that entire thing is satirizing the Hollywood movie scene. Like, it's literally, they're going through the kind of stupid shit that people say at meetings where it's like, we've got the pitch for you, and then they hate the pitch. And it's like, we're just spitballing here. We're just, it's a soup. It's a gumbo.
Have you ever run into that?
Oh, all the time. Oh, no, that's
No, listen, it's a found footage movie, but the guy's actually finding footage, so it's not first person. I mean, we're just spitballing here.
Yeah, no, I actually had a meeting in which I had somebody pitch me what the movie was, and I literally said, no, that's not what the movie is. Let me tell you, and I did the pitch, and the guy was just like, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's the movie right there. That's exactly what we're doing.
Okay.
Like, he literally, like, had pulled a 180, and it was, like, trying to be like, yes, this is, your idea is the movie
so
that
you've
we're...
really never been the person that's had to backflip out of this
situation? Oh, of course I have. Right. Of course I've had to backflip out of stuff, too. You have to, like... But not to the extent that I've never had to do it to the extent in this movie where I like pitch like the pitch and they're like, no. And then I go into a completely different, a radically different take on the movie. But I have been in those meetings where I've heard that happen and seen that happen. So yeah, no, this stuff is really common and it's still common today. And it's really funny how they just kind of eviscerate that. At the same time, while that movie's going on, there's a documentary being made by Alan Cumming.
By Alan Cumming, also appearing in this picture, could also be a tagline for this.
Film. Well, this movie got so like that. Like, very few roles in this movie aren't fucking cameos by big people.
Yeah.
Like, before we get there, let's drop a couple other cameos. Like, there's a scene in a bar, and it's Elvis Costello as the bartender who doesn't even have a line. You've got a flashback sequence where they're talking about how adorable Emma Bunt is and that her smile could get her out of anything. And so they go to a Hercule Poirot novel, an Agatha Christie novel.
Ask your grandparents.
And Hercule Poirot. Well, no, because Hercule Poirot is the star of a movie coming out this month. Like, there
now,
is-
but okay, that movie's not out. So when you're hearing this episode, ask your fucking grandparents.
Yeah. So, but Hercule Poirot is played by Hugh Laurie.
Yes.
Like, in this gargantuan mustache. There's a scene where there's a judge fining them for their latest album not being as fly and fresh as their previous one, and it's Stephen Fry.
Who, by the way, Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie at the time were a comedy duo.
No, before this, they were a comedy duo. They were a comedy duo in the late 80s.
Oh.
A bit of Fry and Laurie. So, yes, you've got that. Elton John and Bob Geldof show up playing themselves.
Elton John, I'm pretty sure, has zero lines, despite the fact that he's ostensibly in a conversation with them. But if you actually watch that scene, he doesn't say anything.
No.
You get Elton John, and he doesn't fucking say a word.
Yeah, and it's and then, of course, as we mentioned, you've got this weird moment where they're pitching the TV show, the Fox Force 5 TV show, and then...
I like how you called it Fox Force 5.
Yeah.
Entirely what that fucking scene is.
It's exactly what it was. It was a riff on Tarantino, riffing on, you know, on stuff from the... on Charlie's Angels and stuff from the 70s. And, one is, and Ginger Jerry is the master of disguise and goes in and to the theme of Wonder Woman, spins really fast, and then turns into Bob Hoskins.
Which, by the way, if I had that superpower, I would use it every goddamn day.
To turn into Bob Hoskins?
Turn into Bob Hoskins, absolutely.
Girl power, equalization between the sexes. Hmm.
So, I mean, this movie is just, like, it's... Like, Dominic West plays a photographer.
Dominic fucking West. Jigsaw himself is in this fucking movie.
Like, it is nuts how many people just kind of just show up and walk on for just the smallest bits. The Elvis Costello one is the one that really kind of really is like, what is it? Why did they put, just so they could have him in frame? I don't understand.
Jennifer Saunders from Absolutely Fabulous.
Oh, yes.
Is in this. There's like...
Jason Fleming.
This movie has more cameos than it has actors. Like, yeah. There are more people doing cameos than there are actual actors in this movie.
So, yeah. So, but Alan Cumming plays the documentarian. He's got 5 days to make a documentary on the Spice Girls, and it's not going well.
Because he keeps getting locked out, because the whole joke in this movie is they don't give a shit about this documentary.
And that he doesn't have any access.
And he's a very pompous, sort of pretentious filmmaker.
Which is one of the things that Alan Cumming does really well. And so when Alan Cumming is on there, and he also has probably the best Spice Girls bit in the movie, where they're making a reference to the Spice Girls music. And, you know, when he gets the pass, and he's like, tonight is the night when three become one. And it's like, okay, it's adorable watching him do it. It's just adorable. Like, just the way he sells it, it's like, dude, Alan Cumming, you made a stupid joke really kind of adorable and fun. All right. Way to go, Alan Cumming.
It's crazy the amount of, like, it's almost like the Billboard Awards were going on across the street, and they were just like, hey, do you want to come in and be in a movie for 5 minutes? Because we're shooting a movie over here about the Spice Girls, so.
Well, and everybody, the thing is everybody loved the Spice Girls at the time. Apparently they were, and still, you know, still do. Apparently they're, you know, for the most part, as a group of girls, they're awesome people, and everybody just kind of liked them. And so, and they were such a big phenomenon, especially over in England. You know, it's not often that a band from England just goes out and conquers the world like that and becomes that huge. So they were a genuine, aren't our age. So those of that are our age remember that this was a phenomenon. There was like a year and a half where you could not get away from the Spice Girls, which is why there was so much backlash. You could not get away from it, and people were just upset. It's like, oh my God, I'm fucking done with these fucking Spice Girls and their fucking Spice music. But that's the type of stuff. That's the type of insertion into pop culture that 5-10 years out, you're like, yeah, you know, now that I'm not subjected to it every day, I kind of have fond feelings of it. Like, there is a certain there's a psychological principle that ties into it that you can
Stockholm syndrome.
Well, it's like that. I was gonna make that joke, but. But I'm glad you ran with it.
You know.
But yeah, where it's kind of Stockholm syndrome with your brain, where you hear a song so many times that you hate that invariably you start to love it.
Oh my God, I just realized if they remade this movie today, it would be 5 Taylor Swifts. It would be 5 Taylor Swifts, because that fucking chick, her music is insidious.
Yeah.
It gets in there and it burrows.
Yeah.
It burrows deep and you can't get it out.
Except her new album doesn't seem
to. No, her new album's fucking terrible, but like the other.
I don't think it's terrible, it's just not. Great.
I'm talking about Taylor Swift on a fucking podcast. Look what you made me do, Cargill. Look what you made me do.
Yeah, I made you do this. Cargill Vember is magical. Now let me get into my favorite character, my favorite actor that's in this movie. Showing just how British this fucking movie is. Richard O'Fucking-Brien is the photographer in this movie.
Oh, okay.
Now, some of you are like, yes, Richard O'Brien. Other people are like, who's Richard O'Brien? Richard O'Brien is, you know, he is a British national treasure. He wrote Rocky Horror Picture Show and stars as Riff Raff in it. He then went on to make the sequel, which is not good.
Shock Treatment?
Shock Treatment. And then he's also in Flash Gordon.
Really?
Oh God, Richard O'Brien, he's one of the, he's the guy who talks, sense to, he's the trusted advisor of, Baron. He's
Clytus?
No, Baron.
Oh, of Baron. Okay.
Baron's trusted advisor, and he's the one who, gets sent into the cage with Flash, and he's like, it's okay, I've got the key. I stole the key. Richard O'Brien's in it. Richard O'Brien shows up everywhere. He did a TV show, several TV shows. I'm pretty sure he's also he was the host of the Crystal Maze.
That's astounding.
Which was a big, big show. Anyhow, he's Richard O'Fucking-Brien. He's great. And, He's a genius, and he plays the photographer here, who is so good at being a paparazzi photographer that he can get anything. And like the great scene where he's like, here's you this morning smelling your socks, here's you in the lift picking your nose, another boogie breakfast, and here's a picture of you with this girl kissing behind the thing when you're 12.
Which I had to stop and go, you know, I don't think that joke would play today because you're taking pictures of 12-year-olds. Like,
well, I think
back up.
Disagree. I think it totally plays today because the whole joke is he's such a good paparazzi that he actually can get stuff that from years ago.
No, but it is interesting that that joke remains in there when one of the things that, first of all, crazy thing about this movie, there are multiple things that happened in the real world that affected, like there are things that are cut out of this movie because of what happened in the real world while it was being filmed. Not the least of which being Gary Glitter was supposed to be in the movie.
Oh, and this is when Gary Glitter happened.
And then, but so that's why it's interesting to me that the photographing 12-year-old joke is still in there, and then Gary Glitter's cut out of it. So,
Gary Glitter.
One of the things is they mention on a couple of occasions in the movie, Princess Di and Johnny Versace, both of whom died while this movie was being made. So they cut all of that out as well. So this movie, like, this movie is a weird Ouija board that just ends people forever. Like,
yeah.
And we're talking about it on Junk Food. That's probably not the highest praise I can give to a movie, is that it's a weird Ouija board that ends people forever. But Spice World.
Yeah, Spice World. Yeah, it's well, what I love about the reason why I'm excited to talk about Richard O'Brien is his element of this movie is probably the most cutting of the satire.
Agreed.
Of this movie, because very much what it's about is it's about the fact it's very much driven by an engine of we have an industry that makes so much money off building these people up and then turns around and makes a lot of money by tearing them back down again.
Absolutely.
And this is about what happens when the phenomenon becomes so big that then the backlash starts and people actively start looking to try to take you out. And so it's very much a joke on how that happens, on how the press misreports something you said. Is the Pope Catholic? All of a sudden goes from being a small joke to a big splash of Spice Girls question
the validity of the Pope.
Yeah, the religion of the Pope. And that kind of shit happens a lot. It happened a lot more before the dawn of the internet because now it's so easy to correct that stuff.
Well, but at the same time, British tabloids are...
They're even worse than ours.
They're worse. Like, they make Fox News look fair and balanced. Like, they are really just fucking... They're ugly. They're just fucking ugly. And the fact that they're still around is mind-boggling.
And in fact, it's funny that you mentioned that because the guy they're making fun of here
is Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, 100%. Like, Rupert Murdoch is exactly... But they didn't mention, of course, they weren't going to mention him, but we wouldn't really get the reference at the time because Rupert Murdoch was the guy that was the guy in the office that did all that. And that's... And so this guy who's very angry and screaming... And wants to destroy the Spice Girls, it's Rupert fucking Murdoch. And then he ends up hiring Richard O'Brien, who walks around in a bunch of crazy fucking costumes taking photos.
It reminds me so much of Slugworth from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
Like, if Slugworth was a paparazzi photographer, which is a movie I would pay to see.
Yeah. And all of that satire is really great because not only are they satirizing the Spice Girls and the phenomenon and just how silly the entire thing is, they're satirizing the press around it and making fun of the press. Like, there's a great moment where they're at an event and they say, do you have anything to say to your fans? And they start speaking in other languages. And the guy hosting the event has no idea what language it is, but is pretending he knows. Yeah. And everyone in the entertainment industry has had that interview where somebody's just where you're in front of the camera and somebody just says some stupid ass shit. They have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. And you just have to keep smiling because you don't want to say it and you can't do that. You're oh shit. Fuck. He didn't just say that. Fuck.
I call that the Mike Myers moment. Because Mike Myers
had
the most epic of those moments.
With Kanye.
He had to stand next to Kanye, and Mike Myers got, go fucking YouTube this shit.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
It is so terrifying. They're paired together on a Katrina, like fundraising event, And Mike Myers reads the teleprompter about how tragic it is and everyone needs to help. And then Kanye
goes off book.
Goes Kanye and is the most Kanye.
And you know, and everybody knows this for, you know, George Bush don't like black people.
Yeah, but if you listen to everything leading up to George Bush don't like black people, and you just watch Mike Myers try and hold it together, when in his head is
and
going,
the moment
what
he looks
the
over,
fuck?
The moment he looks over to the side, like, are we still on? Are we cutting away? Like, fuck, what do you got? Are you just going to do something?
I would feel...
I'm so Canadian right now, and this hurts.
That, you know what? That's your fucking penance for the Love Guru. That's all I'm going to say.
This happened before the Love Guru.
But yeah, retroactive penance.
It is retroactive penance for the Love Guru, because, yeah.
Fuck that movie with a white hot iron rod.
Dude, that movie killed his career. What are you going to do?
Not do that movie! That's what you do. You don't. You look at that script, and you go, this is a bad idea from Jump Street. Never mind. You put the big rubber stamp that says never mind.
Mariska Hargitay.
You know what you do, Cargill? You fucking backflip in that pitch meeting and you go, no, what it's really about, and you make a better movie. Yeah. That's what you do.
Where you jump a bus.
You jump a bus.
But yeah, it's really funny how scathing this is on the press.
Yeah.
But it's also very funny about fandom. And it's also making fun of the Spice Girls themselves. Like, it is not, fuck you, we're awesome at all. It's very much, isn't this whole thing fucking silly? Like, isn't this a really ridiculous industry? And you can, with the knowledge that they broke up shortly after this, this movie really does a great job of foretelling why they broke up. Like, it really does a good job of, like, laying out the phenomenon and then explaining why the whole thing was ridiculous. But it's also very sweet and has a big heart.
It really does. In the moment when that's, God damn it, you want to hate this movie. You want to. Like, you go in wanting to hate this movie, and then you see the scene where they're in the hospital when the baby is born, and it's like, this is really sweet. Or the moment when they're all, like, meeting up at the coffee shop where they definitely in real life did not grow up together.
No.
But that moment where they're all like, because they have the whole romantic MacGuffin. This is where, oddly, the movie plays like a romantic comedy as if they're all in a poly relationship with each other, where they have their romantic MacGuffin and they split up for a little bit. But then they all kind of like, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Well, we're all having the same heartfelt moment and that brings us back together, gathering around this coffee shop where supposedly they all grew up together. And then also, this movie has that sort of Scrubs like fantasy cutaway thing going on where like every few minutes they're like, well, what's it going to be like when we're older? And then it's like, here's a sketch. And what's it going to be like when we have kids? And here's another sketch. And
yeah.
So it's so many different movies thrown together and you want to fucking hate it. But the fact that everybody's so sincere and the fact that they know that they are looking up at the top of the screen and they can see the counter like counting down to the end of their career. And they've got such a great attitude about it. Like, they know the end is in sight. Yeah. They're like, eh.
There's even a ridiculous fucking scene, which in context feels weird and just like, this is how stupid the movie's getting, when aliens show up.
Yeah.
But the reason that they use aliens there is because it allows them to make fun of bad fans without having people playing bad fans.
Yeah.
So their one scene that they interact with fans, they're like, they're supposed to sneak out to the bus and there are all these fans there. So they go up and they're super Spices. They go up and they love their fans and they take photos and they sign and they do everything you're supposed to do.
Hey, you
as have, a huge star.
You have Marvel connections. Let's get Super Spice made into the MCU. Let's do it.
And let's see what we can do. But so they go out and they're just super great with their fans through the whole movie and they're awesome to their fans, but they then run into the bad fans. And so the bad fans are just being played by these aliens who are like, hey, can you get us tickets? And hey, can you sign here on my chest? Like, it gets like they do all the weird things that they're making fun of.
I didn't catch that, but that's
two aliens point. So that they don't have to actually point fingers at fans specifically, but they do get to satirize their fans.
Yeah.
And that they have these crazy, stupid fans because everyone does.
Speaking of comic books, that's the same concept as why you always make the bad guy droves aliens or monsters or demons so that the heroes can cut them down willy-nilly and you keep your PG-13 rating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There is a lot to that. And so that it was a really well orchestrated bit where it's like, why do aliens show up? It's like, so they can make fun of their fans without having people play just gross fans.
Wow. I did not catch that, but that's a really good point.
Yeah. And it's everything in this movie is deliberate and having fun. And
they need to. Like, and here's the thing, guys. They need to have that sense of humor. They need to be self-aware because the Spice Girls are fucking ridiculous. Like, as much as I love them as a kid, I will never forget the moment that made me realize how terrible the Spice Girls are is when they were on Saturday Night Live and they were doing, I think, the song Too Much, and they had four backup singers. And somebody pointed out, it may have been on the next week's Weekend Update, where they were like, you are five singers. There are five of you. You don't really dance. You don't play instruments. And you have backup singers. And it was like, oh, they're not good at anything. And it just like, it melted my little brain.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this was literally a bunch of pretty girls packaged together. And they took that criticism. I mean, in fact, it seemed very... like, at the time, it was very much like a hell yeah, high five moment for a lot of us that were rejecting the Spice Girls at the time. And over time, it's felt meaner and meaner and kind of grosser. But one of George Harrison's last public interviews, he was asked about the Spice Girls. And he said, well, they're not that bad if you turn down the volume. And it's kind of fucking gross. Because you know, wow, you realize that there's a lot of that, that really they were put together.
Oh, see, and it just hit me, the leering quality of what he's saying. I thought it was more, speaking of James Bond, going back to that, I thought it was more when James Bond and Goldfinger has that completely out of left field, unnecessary dig at the Beatles, where he's like, oh, that would be as bad as listening to the Beatles without earmuffs. And it's like, what, does James Bond hate the fucking Beatles? But now I realize that what he's actually saying is, oh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
Oof, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, at first it's like, fuck yeah, they're not real music. And then it's like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with that kind of music. And fuck you, the Beatles played a lot of that too. And if the Spice Girls had been like the Beatles, they could have gone on and done their own stuff. Like Taylor Swift. Like, Taylor Swift started out as country and then moved into pop, and it's good stuff. And then she started doing really interesting stuff, you know, recording with, you know, writing songs with Max Martin and doing some.
Taylor Swift discovered that the secret to her career was, she basically went the hungry rapper route, and I'm dead serious about this.
Yeah.
She figured out the key to her entire career was beef with other pop stars, real or imagined, and never like head on addressing it, but like writing snarky, like feeding the mythos that she had these beefs with all these other people. And it has completely changed the course of her career. And she is a superstar because of it.
Yeah, and I think it's also working against her right now, though.
It's working against her
because people, that's the thing, is we can look back in time at the Spice Girls and go, oh, you know what? The Spice Girls were really sweet. I liked them. People who hated them at the time are like, you know what? They're not so bad. Hey, I can listen to this. Hey, I love karaokeing, you know, like me and one of our friends, Paul. Whenever we do karaoke, if we get drunk enough, me and Paul will do Two Become One.
The only song he will ever do. So weird.
Yeah. He doesn't do karaoke, but he'll do Two Become One with me. And it's awful, and it's and we don't care. It's truly terrible. And people sing along, and they're like, oh God, here it comes. You know, fuck. What?
Stop right now, because it's too much of something. It's not enough. We could do the rest of this episode just quoting Spice Girls lyrics.
But we're not.
And it would still be cohesive sentences, because, yeah.
Do you know what? We can't dance like that.
Yes, I know. I've seen your videos.
But anyhow, we should probably start wrapping this up, because going over an hour on Spice World probably would melt some brains. There's going to be gravitational distortions as a result of this podcast.
Oh, the tides are shifting. Cats and dogs living together, volcanoes. There's all kinds of mass hysteria going on. It's so fitting and so ridiculous at the same time that we are talking about Spice World. But, you know, as we
said, this is what I wanted to do with this fucking podcast. I want to talk about stuff that nobody ever fucking talks about. Cause you know what? I don't think anyone has really given Spice World the respect as satire as I think it deserves. And here it is 20 years later, after the movie first came out.
This is the 20th anniversary.
In the UK, it came out in the following, I think, the spring of 98 in the US. But yeah, this is a nearly 20 year old movie that definitely deserves a revisit, that is definitely fun. And if you watch it as a satire, the satire is so solid. And this movie does not fall flat. this movie just keeps going. There's not periods where you're like, yeah, yeah, get through this. It's like, no, the movie's like, bam, bam, bam. And it's entertaining all the way through. And it's just fun. It's fun to see the cameos. It's fun watching the Spice Girls have a good time. They play just enough of the music that you're like, ah, yes, it's the music. But they never play too much of it. You're not like, okay, finish up the song. They shorten up all the songs. It is a nice, breezy hour and a half of fun.
I'm going to tell you two things to wrap this up about Spice World that is going to melt your brains. First and foremost, you might think to yourself, this was a niche movie, no big deal, who cares? It broke the record for highest ever weekend debut for Super Bowl weekend with a $10 million box office in 1997. That's
which is a lot.
Fucking crazy.
Super Bowl weekend is one of the worst weekends of the year.
Secondly, they were recording their second album while making this movie, which means they got so popular off their very first album that they had this movie made that was making money in the state. Like, that to me is the most insane part about this. They had only been around for one album. That one album, and I have to assume tracks from the second one, because this soundtrack is like 30 of their songs. There's no way it's all from that first album. There's just no way.
No.
There's so many fucking... They got so popular off that first album, this movie got made. That's insane to me. And that's why I think it's so great that they have the sense of humor about themselves that they do, because they're very aware that there's no way they can maintain that. There's no longevity in this. On that first album, they're making this movie about how their cultural phenomenon, which they were, but there's no way that's going to last. And they knew that, and they play with that, and they have a sense of humor about it. And with all the cameos and some of the fun cutaways and some of just the great stuff that's in this, this movie has so much merit.
Yeah.
And that is a sentence. Spice World having merit is a sentence I never thought I would speak in my adult life. But here we are. Which brings us to the junk food pairing. And I had a lot of different ways I could go with this. We could go with spice cake, spice rum, all kinds of stuff like that. We could also go with something that they mentioned in the movie that I didn't know what it was initially. Which is, he says, I'll buy you a chocolate magnum if you work this weekend. And I was like, is that a dirty thing? What the fuck is... Apparently...
It's an ice cream bar.
It's a very decadent ice cream bar.
Yeah, chocolate magnums
are
good.
Not all of us spent 2 months in London, Cargill. Some of us don't know that shit.
They sell it at fucking Target, asshole.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they only sold queso-flavored Ruffles at your Target. I didn't know they had...
No, that was my Mi Tienda that
had
that.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Making that reference. That bit got cut from the episode.
No, it didn't.
Did it not?
Trust me, it's coming back. Something I just found out, Cadbury apparently put out an entire line of milk chocolates with the Spice Girls branded on the front, and each one of them says, it's Cadbury Chocolate Spice is what it's called, where literally you could collect all five, and the poses that they're striking on the front of these candy bars looks almost identical to this fucking movie poster, which, by the way, Posh Spice is wearing a dress on this movie poster that if you're a fan of the show Friends, I'm pretty sure is the same underwear that Rachel mistakenly wears when she's trying to seduce Josh and then has to go to dinner wearing. And they're like, oh, you're going to wear that as a dress? And it's like this big embarrassing thing. Posh is just wearing that fucking dress as a dress and doesn't give a shit because they're the Spice Girls. The Spice Girls, Spice World. We actually talked about it on an episode of Junk Food Cinema. I am starting to have a love-hate relationship with Cargill Vember.
Cargill Vember is a special month.
It's very, very special. It is.
There's a movie that we're covering later, the one that I referenced earlier in the episode where Meatloaf plays a bus driver that you've never seen that you are going to, I think you're going to fucking lose your mind for. Like, seriously, I think you're going to watch it and be like, how the fuck is this not a movie that everybody watches regularly? Because it is an amazing movie. And then there's another movie you haven't seen that I'm really excited for as well. So, yeah, Cargill Vember's gonna be a thing. And then, oh, and for those of you who are like looking forward to stuff, we're bringing back, Junk Food Masters.
Yes.
We're having
Modern Junk Food Masters.
We're going to do it. We're going to try to do it every month. We're not doing it in December because it doesn't work with the December theme, but we're going to do it. We're going to do one this month and then hopefully do it once a month and do just talk about Modern Junk Food Masters. So that should be an exciting thing. So here we go. We're plugging along in Cargill Vember. So let us move on. And thank you guys for listening.
We'll tell you what we love, what we really, really love in Cargill Vember. Speaking of things that you love, you can go to our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio's archive for Junk Food Cinema. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, and you can like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show, I want to recommend just one more time, please become a patron, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. It's a great way for you to support us financially to make sure that, unlike the Spice Girls, this show has longevity. That would be great. We'd really appreciate that. And Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MassaWyrm, MassaWyrm.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury, and you can also find my Facebook page, facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. But I'm going to go out reminding you of the brilliant maxim of Sir Roger Moore. When the rabbit of chaos is pursued by the ferret of disorder through the fields of anarchy, it is time to hang your pants on the hook of darkness, whether they're clean or not. What?
If you want to be my lover...